Many Americans remember Jim Crow, Mississippi from black and white photographs of signs labeling colored and white hanging over fountains, or newsreels of police officers yanking on the leashes of German shepherds as they lunged at freedom marchers. Ralph Eubanks remembers Mississippi as home, an 80-acre farm in Mount Olive, Mississippi, to be exact, where his mom and dad carved out an island of sanity. Now, a father himself, Mr. Eubanks, has been struggling with what to tell his kids about growing up in Mississippi. So how do you explain the history you've lived through to your kids? Our phone number in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can send us an email at totn@npr.org. Ralph Eubanks' new book is titled Ever is a Long Time, A Journey into Mississippi's Dark Past. The author joins us here in Studio 3, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Neil. Thank you very much for having me.
As I understand, this exploration started for you with an online search. Tell us about that.
I decided to check in the fall of 1998, several months after the opening of the Sovereignty Commission files, just out of curiosity to see if my parents' names were in the files.
What's the Sovereignty Commission?
The Mississippi Sovereignty Commission is basically Mississippi's spy agency during the Civil Rights Movement. It was used to monitor the movements of people who might be sympathizers with integration or might try to force integration on Mississippi. It was established by the legislature in 1956.
So this is the equivalent of seeing if you had an FBI file or something like
that.
It
is the equivalent of it, and they were actually to be sealed for 50 years. They weren't to be open until 2023, and they were open in 1998 through a court order.
And when you looked, what did you find?
I found my parents' names with the hot link on the website of the ACLU in Mississippi. And I didn't know what to think. I felt like someone had hit me in the stomach. And my wife was traveling at the time. I called her up and told her what I'd found. And she said, sit down and write about how you feel right now and what you're going to do with this. And that's really when my book started.
Your parents, tell us a little bit about them. Were they rabble-rousing freedom marchers?
I wouldn't say my parents were rabble-rousing freedom marchers by any stretch of the imagination. They were NAACP members at the time, but very quiet NAACP members. Actually, in Mount Olive, the NAACP operated under an assumed name, just to keep the police at bay, because they knew that the Sovereignty Commission was watching. But my mother was a teacher. My father was what was then called the Negro County Agent in Covington County.
And this was under the doctrine of separate but equal, which a lot of people regard as a pretty cruel joke. But nevertheless, there was sort of this parallel universe of Negro officials.
That is correct. And the Negro County Agent had a separate office, a little cinder block office without a bathroom. And I used to go with my father to that office quite frequently. He was very proud to go there. But looking back now, it's actually the same size as my office at the Library of Congress, and there were, I think, four people who shared that office.
Tell us about the title of your book, Ever is a Long Time. Where does that come from?
The title comes from a comment made by the governor of Mississippi on Meet the Press. The governor of Mississippi at the time, in 1957, was James P. Coleman. He was considered a moderate, and he was asked, would Mississippi schools ever be integrated? His response was, well, ever is a long time. A black child, not a black child, but any child born in Mississippi today will never live to see an integrated school. And that was 2 days before I was born.
And you went to an integrated school.
12 years after Mr. Coleman's proclamation, yes.
You were, in fact, the first kid in that school.
I was the first kid in that school. We kept the classes segregated. We were under one roof, but we were segregated. But I was the only black child in my class at the time. I was considered an experiment.
Oh, that's loads of fun.
It was a lot of fun, and I'll never forget sitting there in that classroom and seeing the protesters outside with brooms and mops saying, we're going to clean you out.
And the burden of expectation, on the other hand, you were an experiment for your family and for the African-American community, too.
It was quite a burden, and I think that's why, for a lot of reasons, I remember very little about that time. I really went into a blank. And it wasn't until I started writing this book that I started to recollect some of what happened in those 4 years that I was at Mount Olive High School.
And with all of that, your book describes a childhood that any of us might envy. I mean, this is in some ways idyllic.
It was idyllic, and that's what I think. It's something that is really amazing to people when I tell them about my Mississippi childhood. They say, you could not have grown up in Mississippi. But for people like my family, who were considered middle class, which for Mississippi was middle class, that was the type of life we led.
Your father was an extraordinary man.
He was an extraordinary man.
You write about the dignity with which he approached his work and how he taught you to transcend color in a way, not ignore it, but transcend it.
That was the expectation he had of me. He taught me that everyone was my equal and that I wasn't superior to someone just because of my status of being his son or because of my parents' position, that everyone was an equal.
Your grandfather on your maternal side also played an important part in this story. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, my grandfather, Jim Richardson, married my grandmother. He was a white man, married my grandmother, a black woman, in Alabama in the late teens. And
that was a felony at the time.
A year before my mother was born, by 1928, it was a felony. And he built his house at the end of a road in southern Alabama and dared anyone to come down there after him. And people tried, and they were sorry.
These are clearly proud people. And you grew up with this extraordinary family in this extraordinary time. When you found your parents' name on that Sovereignty Commission website, had you been back to Mississippi?
I had not been back to Mississippi in 10 years. And it wasn't until I found my parents' names in those files that I decided that I might try to go back there. My wife and I had been to Mississippi, and it was not a pleasant experience for both of us. My wife is white. And I decided I'd separated myself from Mississippi, both physically and emotionally. And it wasn't until then that I went back.
You write, you know, as I said, you know, there's this wonderful picture of the place. And clearly you accept this as your home. This is a place you love.
It is a place I love, and it's a very difficult place to love. That's the hard thing. But there's a great deal of affection that I have for Mississippi, and it wasn't until going back there with my children that it really solidified. My son said to me as we were leaving Mississippi, "Mississippi is a very cool place." And I agree with him now. It's one of the coolest places on earth.
Not at this time of the year.
Not at this time of the year, however.
We are speaking with Ralph Eubanks. He's the author of the book, Ever Is a Long Time, A Journey into Mississippi's Dark Past, and he's with us here in Studio 3A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. I wonder, you grew up with this intense sense of place. Home is something you can taste and smell and picture. Your kids, do they grow up with that same sense of place?
I believe that they do. We live in Washington. However, our neighborhood is somewhere that they feel very intensely, and as well as my wife's family home in Colorado. And now they feel that they also have a home in Mississippi.
Really?
Yes, they do.
Your mother's still alive?
Yes, she is.
What does she think about the book?
She loves the book. She's very happy, very proud. And, of course, as only my mother would say, she's a very strong-minded woman. She reminded me of the things that I had left out.
they have a habit of doing that, don't they?
Yes, they do.
While you were there in Mississippi, though, you did have the opportunity to meet, I'm not sure confront is the right word, but the man who put your parents' names.
Right. It was actually the man who put my mother's name in the Sovereignty Commission files. He was the superintendent of education in Covington County, which is where Mount Olive is. And I discovered through looking through the Sovereignty Commission files that he had been a member of the Klan. And I'd planned to confront him about that, sat down, spoke with him, and before I could ask the question, he confessed to me. It was like hearing someone's confession.
Why did he do it?
Why did he become a member of the Klan?
Yeah, and put you in and do all the things, subsequent things that were part of that. Did you come to understand him at all?
I did come to understand him. It was trying to look at it not necessarily through the modern lens, but through the lens of 40 years ago. That's what he felt that he had to do to survive politically. The Klan was very active all around Covington County, not necessarily within, but you have to realize that Mount Olive is very close to Laurel, which was the headquarters of Sam Bowers, who was one of the most notorious Klansmen in Mississippi. So to survive politically, he felt that's what he had to do.
One other question, and that is, as you go back and look at it, obviously people like your father and mother, and even your grandfather, as feisty as he might have been, had to make a lot of compromises in their lives, had to live with the world as they found it. Was this difficult, painful, to go back and realize what they had to go through as the matter of their daily lives?
It was extraordinarily painful to realize that that was what my parents' daily lives were like. And it wasn't until I went back that I realized how much they had shielded me from that world that they faced. They took the blows to keep us from having to take them.
Was there a moment when the vision of the child intersected with the vision of the man?
Yes, on a number of occasions that happened to me. It happened to me quite a bit when I walked the grounds of my old home place. And it's a place that really doesn't exist anymore. It's blown away by a tornado. And the boy and the man were walking side by side as I walked those grounds.
Was it bigger, smaller?
It was much more isolated than I ever remembered it. And it wasn't until I went there and back to my hometown that I started to figure out what I was finding in the immense archive that I'd been exploring in Jackson in the Sovereignty Commission files. My hometown and my old home place really spoke to me and said, if you come back to me, I'll help you figure all of this out. And they did.
Ralph Eubanks writes about figuring it all out in his book, Ever is a Long Time, A Journey into Mississippi's Dark Past. And Ralph Eubanks, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
We leave you with the late Nina Simone's thoughts on the state that we've been discussing. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.